members present are Representative Phillips, Hanley, Donnelly, and Co-Chair Copeland. Co-Chair Ellis is up in Finance Subcommittee, and Representative Hudson is ill. So, meeting is come to order. The first order of business is Senate Bill 2, which we heard extensively and was carried over due to running out of time. The previous meeting, we have no one signed up to testify. Representative Donnelly.
Mr. Chairman, have we already adopted the committee substitute?
We have adopted the committee substitute.
Then I'd move Senate Bill 2 with individual recommendations to the next committee referral.
Okay. I'll ask Senate Bill number 2 has moved to individual. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Next bill is House Bill 489. We have a committee substitute. We'll adopt it. The bill is by Representative Adelaide and Ms. Herman, who is not here right now. She's getting on an airplane, I understand. Mm-hmm. So would you like to testify on the...
I can say a few words.
Sure. If you'd like to.
My name is Rena Yakovich. I'm a staff person for Representative Adelaide Herman. Adelaide is not available this morning. She's on her way to Juneau from Anchorage. She has previously given testimony to the committee on the three sections of this bill, and I can go into that if anyone has questions. But I would just like to say that she is supportive of any efforts to pass any section, all of this bill or any section of this bill. And I'll just leave it open, and if I can answer any questions, I'm here to stand very well.
Any question?
Mr. Chair, could the witnesses briefly explain again the legislation?
All three sections of the bill?
Yeah.
Section 1, do you want the whole bill or just...
There's the committee substitute.
The committee substitute. Yeah.
Essentially, what this bill would do would be to lower the weighted average for awarding a second bilingual instructional unit. Right now, one unit is awarded for school districts which have a bilingual program, which could serve a small or a large number of students. Conceivably, one instructional unit could be given to a school district that has multiple sites and multiple bilingual programs. So conceivably, one district could get $60,000 to serve several sites for their bilingual program. This amendment would not affect school districts with small populations or school districts with large populations. It would mainly affect school districts with medium-sized bilingual populations. Does that answer your question?
Not really. Say exactly what it's going to do for the... It's those districts over 13, right? Is that what it's doing, or...?
It lowers the cutoff point. Right now... And if we're going to get into a technical discussion, I should probably leave it up to the department or others who can explain it better than I can. But in summary, right now, the cutoff point for awarding bilingual units to get the second unit, right now, the weighted average has to be at around 24. This would lower that cutoff point to 13. So school districts would now when they have a weighted average of 13, they would get their second bilingual unit.
So this would be staff, essentially, for bilingual classes or aides, that we're talking about. I'd like to mention that one of the representatives is here, Co-Chair Ellis is here. We have, we passed the SB 2 thing around so we can get it over to the next committee. We'll try to do that for I understand from conversations with the department that we're going to have to look at the foundation formula because the federal public light 7.4 regulations are changing, and we have to, our foundation formula after next year will no longer be applicable. But rather than forcing opening up a discussion at this point of rewriting the whole foundation formula and also dropping an extra $6 million on the finance committee chair, who might be somewhat annoyed at that, we have decided to just take it section by section and look at the particular classes that would be affected. This would affect classroom education and bilingual education. Thank you. We have, the bill will be held over until tomorrow since we don't have this one on. We have Terry Mixel. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman,
fill us in on the technical detail.
Mr. Chairman, Nate. Gerald Mixel, Department of Education. I haven't seen the committee substitute, so I can't really respond to it, but in general, the department is not anxious to open the foundation bill up this year. We only have 9 months of experience. We don't have any audits. We have no data on which to make valid judgment. We are looking at a major overhaul next year. We have identified a number of problems that we need to address. Among them are some of the things that were recommended in HB 489. And we very well may come back with those same recommendations, but at the present time, don't feel that we have enough information to make really valid judgments.
The committee substitute is only Section 2 of the original bill, deals only with bilingual bicultural.
Mr. Chairman,
perhaps you could explain or respond to Representative Donnelly's question about how all that operates.
Yes, specific questions?
Well, how does it operate?
Well, right now, the districts get a minimum number of units per site if they are offering the program at all. And essentially what this bill does is increase the number of units generated by decreasing the number of students qualified to generate those units, as far as I understand. But I haven't really had a chance to read it yet.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Nancy Shore?
Nancy Shiva, I have no testimony regarding the substitute.
Henry Kilmer?
Morning, I'm Henry Kilmer, Superintendent of Schools in Dillingham. I will hold my remarks just to the bilingual part of this particular bill, although we do have a lot of support for the entire parts of the bill because we're one of those single-site districts that have been hurt fairly badly by the funding formula and have taken some pretty large reductions. The bilingual part of this particular bill would give some additional units to a number of school districts. Let me give you an example of the kinds of things that happened under the funding formula. And Dillingham and Bristol Bay School District, both out in our area, are good examples. The Bristol Bay School District has 14 underachieving bilingual students, and that's the ones that count under this bill. They went under this bill from about $57,000 up to $76,000, just a small increase, but they did increase under this particular bill with their 14 students. Dillingham has 70 underachieving bilingual students, and under the current foundation formula, we dropped from $170,000 down to $76,000. So there's two school districts sitting side by side. One lost $100,000, the other gained under the current funding formula. One has five times more bilingual students than the other. What this would do would be lower the cutoff point where the larger of the two school districts would receive some additional dollars for its bilingual program.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Speaking to the rest of the bill, since we haven't adopted the committee substitute or the need for what would be the... If we mandated some sort of cooperative or joint effort between the two districts, what sort of joint operations would save sufficient money to be able to put more money into the classroom or the other effort, or thinking particularly of administrative efforts, purchasing, that kind of thing. Which kinds of operations could be combined or done jointly that would save sufficient funds or significant amount of the funds?
I can't think. Bristol Bay is air miles away, about 75 air miles away. I couldn't think of anything we might use jointly. Our dollars under the bilingual program go into...
I'm thinking the whole program.
The whole
bill. As I said, we haven't adopted the committee substitute, so we probably will tomorrow when we get the fiscal note. But if instead of giving single-site school districts more money, if we're mandated that you develop some sort of joint program in purchasing or whatever it happens to be. In most places in the United States, as in going in the other direction of consolidating school districts or a set of union school districts or regional cooperative educational services, provide a whole host of things, you know, BOCES and things like that. We have not done that. We looked at that about 15 years ago, and we have the statutes, but nobody's used them.
Perhaps administratively, combining districts or combining some of those programs might save some personnel costs administratively. As far as purchasing, we buy, as do many of the school districts in our area, buy through King County in Seattle and receive some pretty good buys through the Seattle barges, barge things up, buying through King County school districts.
So you have a cooperative relation with them?
Relationship there, yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my impression that you're probably going to be having some discussions on the single site district, and I think we're all aware that there are probably some inequities, and that we're aware that we have a problem with the single site district. I'm looking at this and thinking, I wonder if eventually we might address that whole problem and hopefully come up with a general solution rather than approaching it piecemeal and coming in with bilingual special ed, you know, as it applies to the single site, because I think that we're all aware that, you know, maybe that the formula has created maybe some inequities in the single site school district.
We met yesterday. We had representatives, boards, and superintendents of 19 school districts that are single site districts. And at that time, we are coming up with some proposal for a meeting again this afternoon to try to have some joint efforts to plead our cause to this committee and others that there are some inequities in that formula. Give an example. You may have seen this example. If you take a school site with 300 students, that school site will generate about $1.5 million. If you take that same 300 students and put them over three sites, you'll generate about $2.1 million, and that's about another $600,000. When you go back and try to equate and or figure the cost of running those three sites over the one site, you have a hard time spending that $600,000, because the three sites generate additional dollars beyond what it would cost to run those three sites. So single site districts are losing a considerable amount of money under the funding formula, and it built right into the basic K-12 part of that funding formula. And we have pleaded our case, but we need to band together and to really get some good hard data to support that before we present some changes in that. And that's our intent.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you.
Neil, I have a question. You said there's no waiting for a fiscal note?
Yes, and Representative Herman will be here tomorrow, we hope.
Okay, well, there's a fiscal note here. It's from, trying to find the date here, mid-March. In Section 2, there's no change. Section 2 is $632,000.
Yeah.
Well, there's something else.
A Dillingham under this gets $76,200, but actually you already received a portion of that. This isn't an addition, is it?
Under the bilingual portion,
yeah.
We've dropped from 170 down to 76. This would increase to 76 more.
Right.
For your
right.
So this is the increase.
Yes.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is why, I mean, this note should have been easy to produce.
We just got the, we can probably drop the fiscal note wrap easily, but there may be more testimony on just this part tomorrow, and get it from the department officially. That's not that difficult.
I heard this with this package.
Yeah,
this is column 9.
However, if you'd like to move to adopt it, Randy, if you want to move to CS,
well,
adopt
yeah,
the CS.
I might as well go ahead and I'll move that we adopt the CS for House Bill 489.
We'll go to court. Okay. Any objection to that? We'll pull a CS over and analyze. Is there anyone online? We noticed that Yakutat, Valdez, and Ketchikan are listening only. What about Delta Junction? Did you want to say anything on this bill?
No, thank you.
Thank you. At this point, we'll have the State Commissioner of Education report on the pay skill assessment. I think we told the senator at 9:30, you've got a half hour instead of 15 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Bill Horn, the Commissioner of Education for the State Department of Education. With me today, I have Tony Jones, who is the Director for Education Program Support, and Rob Sullivan, the gentleman responsible for collecting the effort on student assessment. As you know, the department, along with school districts throughout the state, prepared a very limited student assessment analysis and information on reading comprehension, mathematics, math problem solving, and language arts. Overall, Alaska is doing very well. We're at or above national averages as a state. There are individual school districts that are at or below or above national averages, but as a state, we're above. And the college entrance exams that our students are taking in high school verify that information. We're also at or above national average in the ACT and the SATs. And to reinforce the report card on Alaskan students, we have more students taking that test than the national averages. Nationally, about 30% of the high school students take those tests. In Alaska, I think we're at about 50%. There are pockets of low achievement. Somewhere between 15 and 30% are at-risk students across the state, and we do not serve those students very well as a state or as school districts. The other is that we have a fair number of rural, poor, bilingual schools that did not do very well. And if you're interested, we can get into some of that information specifically. As a part of the report that I wanted to make, there's a growing recognition that there are other intelligences that are important to success as adults, and in many cases to rural and minority communities. For example, spatial intelligence. For example, interpersonal and intrapersonal intelligences. Bodily kinesthetic, which is muscle movement. And then, of course, musical, linguistic, and logical, mathematical. And schools generally focus on the language and the logical, mathematical intelligences, and not the others. There are five basic principles that we're attempting to set for any future assessments that we might undertake, and I'd like to go ahead and list those. First, student assessment must assess performance on a statewide consensus of what is important to learn. And if there are some other intelligences that are important to success or to rural or minority communities, then we certainly need to include those. Second, statewide assessment must account for the different circumstances and needs that school districts face individually and collectively. For example, in some communities, the early grades focus on language development of the home language and where that is different than English. The national standard assessments would not be appropriate unless they were in that language. Third, statewide assessment must be tied to concrete features of the school districts that can be changed for the better by local school boards and educators through initiatives of the Alaska Legislature, the State Board of Education, and the Department of Education. Fourth, statewide assessment is based on sound testing and psychometric practices. And fifth, statewide assessment is based on procedures that minimize intrusion into instructional time. There are five points that we need to keep in mind as we plan to improve academic achievement level of students. One is establishing an early base for learning is absolutely essential. We usually refer to that as early childhood education and parenting. Second, family support and attitude is very important and is significant for students in the early years especially. Third, K-6 experiences are crucial. Each year must be built upon the previous. If you have a bad year, then you have to overcome that, and that takes time. And if students have good years, then you're able to build on those each year.
Okay.
Fourth, and this is a major problem in Alaska, assessing the social needs of students and family, or addressing the social needs of students and family, are important considerations, especially where they serve as barriers to academic achievement and schooling. And then finally, linguistic needs of students must certainly be addressed as one of the important, most important areas to academic achievement, especially where the home language is other than English. And I'm not sure how well we're doing that as a state.
Thank you. How well are we doing in finding appropriate tests? I remember that my own children did very poorly on reading readiness tests even after they were already reading, because if you remember the older tests, they used to have pennies, and of course in Fairbanks in the 50s, pennies didn't come in until parking meters did. We never used them. I remember one of the picture figures was that of a wagon with only two wheels, and the kids all picked that one instead of the one with four wheels, because the one they had at home wasn't with two wheels. So, you know, there's something of this situational thing that we have to look at. You know, how does one pick the appropriate equivalent? In those days it would have been the pennies. Now I'm sure pennies have come into use. They're probably falling out of use because of inflation, but how do we get the appropriate images that are used for testing rather than fixing on something that may not be appropriate?
Well, I'm not sure that we can pick tests that are appropriate for all groups in all communities and all schools, in part because of the different priorities that may have been established in those communities or in those schools. We are looking at the possibility of a statewide assessment. Right now, the school districts pick and choose their own based on, in part, what they're attempting to do. And criterion reference testing certainly does that to a much better degree than the standardized tests that we take. Bob, do you have any thoughts?
Yes, I'm Bob Silverman. I'm from the Department of Education.
Yeah, well, sure.
One of the practices that all of our districts have gone through when they selected their test for use in each of our districts that have standardized tests is to have that test reviewed most often by community members, teachers, and others to try to guard against those concerns that you mentioned. And certainly statewide adoption that we might go through with a single test to be administered statewide would also go through a process. Review and analysis to make certain that issues like you mentioned are addressed. There are compromises to be made along the way.
As a teacher, I found tests useful for analytical purposes. Even that Iowa had a section where the teacher could analyze why they were getting the kind of answers that they got. There are a lot of people who conceive of tests as a sort of scorecard to see who's winning or as a hurdle to be exceeded. But, and again, as a classroom teacher, to me, the usefulness of the Iowa was that it helped me point out the kind of problems that a given student or students were having. I remember one particular one that's common in fifth grade was the inability to add decimals. You know, they add the numbers correctly, but they wouldn't put the decimal points in a row. And so I had the technique when I saw that was true of about a third of the class. I told them to think of the decimal point as a sort of bead and string all the beads on one line before they start adding the numbers up. And there were other things like that. And for Alaskan students, they were very bad on map reading skills. They couldn't have found their way out of a hayfield. That was brought to my attention, I could bring the requisite skills to bear and teach them, how to use the particular thing. And I'm not sure, beyond that, how useful the tests were from the... is there any way that we can, or you can use these group test scores to analyze what needs to be, what sort of resources need to be provided the different districts, what sort of changes we might make in programs?
Well, as you point out, first of all, it certainly gives you, it certainly gives us a measuring stick for students in Alaska across the nation. And it gives school districts a measuring stick to other schools in the state when you take a look at state averages. And that's probably important to know. The second thing is that, and as you point out, it certainly gives us an opportunity to identify areas students are having problems in, or school districts might be having problems in, and an opportunity to focus on those problems as teachers or as school districts. To give you an example of some of the things that this assessment has done for us in the state. I've gotten together with the School Administrators Association and 10 or 12 of the superintendents from districts that had scores significantly lower than the national average, down in the 25th percentile. And we can certainly go into some of the reasons for that, if you'd like. But what we're attempting to do with the department, with the school, those school districts, and in some cases with the university, is to focus on those specific problems, one of which is probably language development. We're talking about a need to change some teacher training programs and strategies. We're talking about the need to change the way we introduce language in some of those schools. And we're also talking about the need to emphasize language development in classes in those schools. And I think that's a very important reason.
I'd also be interested in seeing the tie-in between teacher turnover and I should think a teacher would know her his or her class or community. But Representative Ellis has a question.
Commissioner, I'm sure you're aware that the current House version of the DOE budget contains money for the department to develop student achievement standards. And if that survives all the way through the budget process, how do you envision that timelines and a process for development of those student achievement standards?
The first thing that we're going to have to do is sit down and look at changes that we will have to implement as a result of the budget level. We had two or three different levels with certain kinds of activities under each, starting from very simple to a little more comprehensive. And with the level that the House has given us, it's a little more than the bottom. It's not quite the total amount that we asked for, so we're going to have to sit down and adjust for that. The second thing, and as part of that, we will probably meet with our advisory committee, statewide committee on student assessment, and bring in some additional groups to that advisory committee to identify, to begin looking at the kind of test we would like to implement on a statewide basis. And that will probably take a while to do. We would like to consider adding a high school dropout component to that, as well as some post-secondary information. Students that have been out of school for a five-year period to find out what they're doing, what they considered worthwhile, and what wasn't very helpful, as well as to see how well the school, in fact, did for them, because schooling, in part, is an opportunity to prepare for adulthood. And if they're not doing very well with adults, then we may need to do something different in schools. If they're doing very well, then we need to get a sense from those individuals what those important areas are. I think I answered your question.
Yes, you did. And Mr. Chairman, if time allows, when the Commissioner is finished, I'd like to also pose the same question for Representative Larson's staff about the thinking of the Finance Subcommittee when you went through the budget, just to see if we're all agreeing and working together on this.
Any further questions? Well, maybe at this point we might have a lot of staff on that question.
We're on teleconference. I apologize for catching you cold, but just wondered what Representative Larson's thoughts were about the money that was put in the budget.
The commissioner addressed it to some extent in that the department had requested an amount of money greater than what the House finally settled on, and they'd asked for a three-tiered, if possible, approach to student assessment, dropout, a really comprehensive approach. When we came to sorting out the amount of money, it was not in the governor's amended budget,
so it
was money above the cap, above the it was found in the money that Representative Larson asked the office to allocate above the cap. So we put $110,600 for student assessment. That was $90,600 for personnel and $20,000 for that. And there is an intent language that indicates that it is the intent of the legislature that the department continue their efforts that they began this past year, and that they work for a single basic skills instrument for FY90.
Mr. Chair, had it been expected to be in the governor's revised budget figures, or?
I think it was expected to be, and it was, I believe, the intent of the department, but something happened, and they probably could explain better than I.
Water under the bridge.
Yes, our understanding it was a high priority of the Board of Education and of the Department of Education, and it failed to get in the governor's amended, so we had to find that money for that out of that amount of money, that $380,000 that Representative Larson sought and received.
I'm glad that happened. Thank you very much.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify on the assessment before we proceed to the Senate Bill 42? I was just wondering how the administrators from the different districts felt about the assessment test, in what direction, or any of the representatives of the teachers or administrators felt. Ms. Hanlon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'd also be curious. During my time on the school board, we heard probably more negative comments about testing than we did positive. I was impressed with your comments and what you learned and how you took advantage of the test results in teaching some of the some of the things you realized were weaknesses in the students' education. It seems to me that the trend has been probably do less testing. I recognize as a concern for the time in the classroom that is taken, and we can go overboard, but I do believe I still advocate testing. I think it's important to know how school districts compare to one another, and certainly our students are not staying in Alaska. We have a lot of students going outside, so I still consider the testing and this assessment and these evaluations to be important tools, and I'd be interested if other people think that maybe the time has come to do something differently.
I must admit that as a teacher, I sort of resented the time it took and figured I might as well get some useful information for myself out of it,
right,
and use it in my own lesson plan. And it did require reading the test manual and the information was there, at least in the Iowa, I'm not sure. The WISC also was fairly informative. That divided into verbal and nonverbal intelligence, and very early noted that the nonverbal material, the native students scored very much higher on the ability to conceptualize and visualize the rotation of blocks and other things. We'll now take up Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 42 Finance, which was passed out of State Affairs, originally meant to essentially waive it, since it takes in teachers who work during the territorial service. And do we have someone from the department that could comment on this?
There's a sponsor's representative.
We have a sponsored representative back here, so go for it.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Roxanne Stewart. I'm an aide to Senator Duncan, and I just have a brief statement about are we still on Hill Park?
Yes.
About the, what Senate Bill 42 would do. And basically, it relates to territorial and BIA service under the retirement incentive program and would remedy an inequitable situation which arose as a result of the original retirement incentive program. The situation was that a handful of teachers scattered throughout Alaska who had service time with the Bureau of Indian Affairs were not eligible to participate in the incentive because of an amendment to the original legislation which excluded the use of BIA service credit, even though the teachers had taught in Alaskan schools, which were operated by the BIA until the early 1970s. The finance CS for Senate Bill 42 would open a short window period between enactment of the bill and August 1, 1988, exclusively for the teachers with BIA service discussed above. There is a small non-general fund fiscal impact. It's supported by the Department of Administration, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I noticed in the packet there, they think there's about 50 people here. How are these people going to be notified? Or, so if we pass this bill, I don't want to be coming back and say, oh, by the way, you've got me, and we need another bill.
I believe I defer to the department to answer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Bob Stalnaker, Acting Director for the Division of Retirement Benefits. As Roxanne pointed out, we are in support of this. This would recognize service for teachers teaching Alaskan students, and I think it was the intent of the RIT. To answer Representative Phillips' question, we would intend to notify all employers of the school districts of the change in the statutes, because before any teacher would be eligible, they would need to be designated by the employer anyway. So we would be notifying all employers to put information on the bulletin boards and so forth so the teachers would know. We would also intend to include it in our news break, which goes to all active members of the teachers' retirement system.
Any further questions?
The fiscal impact is, according to the fiscal note, very light indeed.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. We imagine, as I pointed out, there's approximately 50 people that could be affected. There would be additional manual effort in processing those retirements. This would cover a non-permanent employee for about 3 months, from the month of June and then to the month of July and August to process any additional applications, and also make adjustments to people that have already retired under the RIP that, had they been able to use this service, could have had their benefit calculated differently.
Does it have any a negative actuarial effect?
No, it doesn't, because the employer would be paying the full employer cost up front, as was intended with the RIP in the first place.
Okay. Any further questions or testimony? Chair will entertain a motion. Chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to find the correct
committee substitute over here. Senate Bill 42, finance.
Mr. Chairman, I move that said bill move out of committee with individual recommendations.
Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And we'll sign it and pass it on to. Thanks.
Boy, that cleared it out.
Time is now 25 minutes after 9. The meeting is adjourned. We find.